Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Jean Monnet Centers on Citizens' Rights. I'm Romane Lieber and this is a series of conversations with guest speakers or project team members.
Today we are going to talk about movement rights in the EU's neighborhood. That is a topic of an academic seminar that will take place at the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission in Dublin next week. To talk about this, we have here today some amazing guests. Professor Dagmar Sheikh, Dr. Anthony Suarez, and Dr. Oksana Olovko-Avrishova. Professor Dagmar Sheikh is a principal investigator of the Jean Monnet Center for Citizens' Rights and European Integration. Dagmar is professor of EU law here at UCC and the vice dean for research in the School of Law. Her principal research interest is in EU law and its socioeconomic impact in and beyond the EU. Dr. Anthony Suarez is director of the Cross-Border Center, which aim at contributing to the social, economic, and territorial cohesion of the island of Ireland. His recent research has notably focused on the consequences of UK secession from the EU on the island of Ireland. Dr. Oksana Olovko-Avrishova is an associate professor of European law at the University of Lviv in Ukraine. Her recent research has focused on EU-Eastern neighborhood relationship, in particular EU-Ukraine relationship. So thank you all for coming today. Professor Dagmar Sheikh, can you maybe tell us a little bit more about this seminar, what it is about, and what are you trying to achieve with this seminar?
No, thank you for your question. That seminar is part of the Center of Excellence in relation to EU citizens' rights. And the whole idea is to see how the EU legitimacy can be enhanced by EU-derived rights. Now, rights derived from EU activity, EU law, are not limited to the EU itself. And that's why we look into the neighborhood. Now, persons is always a delicate matter when you go beyond states and also when you go beyond the EU. And for this seminar, we wanted to contrast what happens in the new Western neighborhood of the EU, which is the UK, and here specifically Northern Ireland, and what happens in the eastern neighborhood in Ukraine. And when we wrote the application back in 2021, Ukraine was much less problematic than today. So I think the focus of the seminar has shifted. But what remains is the question, if we do not have the stable framework of European Union law and European Union rights, can we still have promotion of people movement? Or is it rather a disruptive experience in the future for Northern Ireland and Ireland? And how does a new movement from Ukraine? I mean, there were always provisions of movement of people in the Ukraine-EU as a deeper comprehensive trade agreement, but it has created a fully new reality with the war. It's more the focus on temporary protection than on other movement for civil society purposes. Well, that's what we want to do in the seminar. We are really glad that the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission is hosting it. This will have a continuation in a seminar on anti-discrimination rights in EU and Northern Ireland and Ukraine in February next year. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to ask a question to Dr. Anthony Suarez then. Then your contribution will focus more on Ireland. So can you tell us a little bit about how movement rights on the island of Ireland have been impacted by the UK secession from the EU? Did the Ireland-Northern Ireland agreement represent a step backward regarding movement rights on the island of Ireland?
Excellent. Thank you for that question. And maybe I'll start with the second part first. In terms of the protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland, or now you want to call it by its new name, the Windsor Framework, it's important to remember that Northern Ireland's status in terms of its relation to the EU is within the protocol and the Windsor Framework, is specifically in terms of integration into the European single market in terms of goods. The freedom of movement principle ended when the UK left the EU, which includes Northern Ireland. We no longer have freedom of movement in the same way that we had before Brexit. And what that has created really is uncertainty. Uncertainty in terms of how EU rights are applied, what EU rights people still have access to. It also means that a whole new constituency of citizens who may live on the island of Ireland now live under a different framework in terms of whether they wish to enter into the UK, including Northern Ireland. And even in terms of their the legislative framework in which they are now able to enter into the UK, including Northern Ireland, is now a different one. It's no longer the one that we shared when we both, we as in the Republic of Ireland and the UK, had shared membership with the EU. The framework has changed completely. There is now a fracture. And it also means that even that new constituency of people, EU citizens, non-Irish, non-UK citizens largely, it also means that questions arise as to what they are able to do once they enter into the UK. So that we're now living in a different, completely different set of circumstances, which has really created lots of uncertainty for citizens, which we are still trying to address. And that uncertainty will continue because this new context is one that is continually evolving. And it really is, it's just going back to that essential question, we've lost a common framework, a common framework of rights, and we have a fracture now.
Well, thank you for this, Anthony. I'm going to go to Oksana now. So your research has focused notably on the Eastern Partnership and how the EU has played a crucial role in modernizing economies and supporting policy reform in these regions. So on the subject of the EU-Ukraine Deep and Comprehensive Free Trade Agreement, what did this agreement brought for citizens? If you take a citizen perspective, how did this agreement impact Ukraine citizen movement rights, if it impacted at all?
Yeah, well, that's thank you very much for the questions, Romana. I think they are important questions because indeed in case of Ukraine, we have to divide the situation. We have a period when the association agreement was applied in the pre-war time, and we have the nowadays totally different situation where with the war outbreak. And I think that impacted in both cases the rights of citizens and also their movement of rights as well. If we are talking about the very first period, up to my opinion, that was very essential part because the deep and the comprehensive free trade area agreement actually contributed tremendously to the development of the economic relations between the EU and Ukraine. It started already in 2014 when Ukrainian trade diverted towards the European Union, and even today the EU is a big trading partner for Ukraine, and that's clear what the, so far what the reasons are beyond that. But in 2014 it was not that much very clear that that shift will take place, and with that shift the very three parts of the association agreement became very important. That's a part regulating the rights of workers, but also this is the part which was devoted to the right of establishment and to provide provision of services. Both three parts are regulated by the agreement. The freedom of free movement of workers was not established within that agreement. However, in the area of services and establishment, the liberalization took place, and very effective one. And that contributed, of course, to in a direct way to the situation of discussing how the people and businesses are moving across the borders in terms between the European Union and Ukraine. And that was a positive development because it was the indirect effect, I would call that, on changing certain rules within the Ukrainian domestic legal order with regard to exercise of professions, for example, inside the country. And of course, when we are talking about the outbreak of the war, we have totally diverse situation. We have a migration caused by war, and it does not anything to do with a type of immigration we had before, which was merely economic one. And this is not the type of the political migration. This is really not a very, very specific case of where certainly by some estimation Ukraine has lost around 8 million of people right now, partly 5 million residing in the European Union and over 3 million are said to be to be migrated to Russia or Belarus. So this is a huge part of Ukrainian population is currently out of the country. And within the EU, we know that there is a regime of temporary protection, and that's a very important one because it helps Ukrainian population to overcome the difficulties and manage the daily life in the EU. For many reasons, and I think this is a really very 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 interesting example of opening European regulatory framework for allowing Ukrainian citizens to reside, to live, and to work in the European Union, even benefit from the social system so far of the member states. And that's very important what the recent developments are. I think we have to we can compare the situation. In both cases, the association agreement plays actually a crucial role in terms of economic relations, but also in terms of regulations of rights inside of Ukraine and inside of the European Union for Ukrainian nationals. So being sharp, it is a totally different situation as from countries who are leaving the EU. Ukraine is a country which is going to join to the European Union, and that's the very next nexus which makes the association agreement important, because it addresses a long set of issues covered by the approximation clauses. And of course, the regulation in area of migration will become a part of it. And the very third part is that Ukraine, of course, experiences really hard need to reconsider its migration policy, because we are talking about the national migration legislation. And of course, war is a shock which will require the consideration upon future Ukrainian migration rules and migration policies. And I think this will be the next point, which is very important and will become important in terms of the nexus to the combating of illegal migration and all those negative issues which are linked to the migration as a phenomenon as well. So that's being short on that questions.
Well, thank you, Oksana. Now I wanted to ask all of you a question that is related to the Jean Monnet research focus. I'm asking this question to all of our guests. So the Jean Monnet research focus is to investigate how EU-derived rights can actually contribute to the EU legitimacy in the EU, its neighborhood, and globally, while adopting a citizen's perspective and considering how citizens perceive rights, how citizens use rights. So in the EU's neighborhood, are EU-derived rights usable for citizens? And do you think their use can contribute to the EU's legitimacy? So maybe, Anthony, you can start, and then Oksana and Dagmar, you could say a few remarks on that as well.
Okay, that's a complex question to actually answer, because obviously the UK has gone in completely the opposite direction to Ukraine. Ukraine is an accession country wishing to enter the EU. The UK has taken the absolute opposite decision and has left the EU, and particularly for Northern Ireland, in terms of EU talking about EU legitimacy and EU rights within the context of Northern Ireland and a divided society and divided political landscape in terms of their views of the EU, talking about EU legitimacy here, let's say, brings very divided responses. I'll give you just very one quick example. There's a proposal from the European Commission to advance with an instrument to facilitate cross-border cooperation, and the initial proposal included external borders of the EU, could include territories external borders of the EU, where EU law would apply in the territory of the neighbouring strait or a defined cross-border territory. Now that proposal might seem a very good one, because it would remove certain obstacles, which actually exist, not just at external borders, but within internal borders of the EU. There are many obstacles for cross-border cooperation and cross-border mobility, and such an instrument would perhaps facilitate, remove those obstacles. But when you talk about, let's say, applying EU law as Irish law as an EU member state, and particularly Irish law in the cross-border territory into Northern Ireland to remove certain administrative obstacles that could prevent cross-border mobility, that becomes a very, very contested question. Just the idea of defining what a cross-border territory is, putting lines on a map, going into Northern Ireland that includes the Republic of Ireland, and then saying that law from the Irish side would apply on the Northern Irish side, that is incredibly, incredibly contested and problematic at this moment. However, just going back to the original question and maybe taking it outside of the context of the island of Ireland, I do think that the EU citizen or EU rights for citizens, and that increases and facilitates cross-border mobility within the EU and into neighbouring states, does increase the EU's legitimacy both within the EU and, if appropriately discussed and done in negotiation and in agreement with neighbouring states, would also increase EU legitimacy within those neighbouring territories of the EU, if done in consultation and done in the agreement and mutual understanding. Absolutely. It's just repeating within the context that we find ourselves now, Brexit, UK having left precisely because of questions around legitimacy of the EU, it is a bit more problematic here.
It is. Yeah, thank you, Anthony. And Oksana, what do you think, Jan? What are your thoughts?
That's a totally different perspective, as you rightfully noticed, Anthony, because we are a country which is going to join to the European Union. And this EU legitimacy question is not pretty much disputable in Ukraine, because currently the popular opinion is again and stable in the wartime round. 90% of Ukrainian population is in favor of Ukraine joining to the European Union, by the way, as the NATO as well, because merely of the security threats. However, as soon as we step aside from that situation where we are, the questions will arise, because the question how the European Union law will apply in Ukraine and whether it will apply in Ukraine to citizens. Also, as well, they need to make Ukrainian legal system compatible with the European Union requirements and rights which are embedded in the domestic legislation. In many cases, it can cause, of course, a lot of internal discussions and debate. So once we have really very, very, very green light and very, very stable situation in that regard, that the popular opinion and political elites go beyond currently the EU membership. But I think, as usually, the devil is always in details. Once you start to negotiate the application of certain rules or within the domestic legal order, that will become certainly the question and the debate. But nevertheless, I think it is it will definitely contribute once the questions are negotiated and solved, because without that part in the area of the citizens' rights, it is, I think, not possible to set up only a legislative framework and say that it's already applicable. This is always a part of the social consensus inside it. It needs to be in certain cases. I think this will certainly bring to better understanding the European Union inside Ukraine, but also it will serve as a basis for the EU legitimacy also, for the legitimacy of the EU actions inside, outside of the borders before Ukraine joins to the EU. And in terms of practical questions, I think that the EU derived rights were always important for Ukraine and Ukrainian nationals, because of the labor migration, economic migration Ukraine experienced since its independence. A lot of people are actually already embedded into the national legal orders in the EU member states, besides, of course, the temporary protection measures we have. So a lot of them are benefiting from the models which are available in the European Union inside. And I think this is also the experience which needs to be taken into account while developing future models and for the cooperation between Ukraine and the European Union on migration issues as well.
Well, thank you, Oksana. Dagmar, would you have something to say on the research question of the Jean-Monnet?
I'll be really short. I'll pick up on what Oksana has said. The devil is always in the detail. We are all migrants within the EU and from outside the EU. And even within the EU, person movement rights are not perfect. All three of us, Anthony, Roman, and myself, have lost rights because we migrated in the EU. We had pension rights to social claims. And outside the EU, it's even more complicated. With the protocol, I think it can be interpreted as encompassing free movement, but those who are dominant in interpreting the protocol, including my colleagues from Queens, say it doesn't encompass free movement because the right to choice residence seems to be totally different from free movement in an EU interpretation. If you do a proper interpretation under European Union law, which is purposive and teleological, it would encompass that. But when British lawyers start interpreting it, there's no right left to free movement. With Ukraine, we have no proper free movement rights in the deep and comprehensive free trade agreement. We have the right if people move and if the member states agree to take those Ukrainians, they have the same rights. That is something. Yeah? Yeah. And that's worth more. This is no longer the case with UK citizens, although there's a commitment. And so when it comes to free movement, we can see that the detail is devilish. In theory, I think rights can enhance legitimacy if they are compact enough and understandable enough to be used by normal citizens, so not only by those who can command about a whole law school to help them using them. And if that's not the case, then rights may be disruptive because they can be used by those who have access to legal advice and not by the others. So that's the question on which we are working in the whole program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dagmar. Thank you all for coming. It was a pleasure receiving you. And thank you for listening. This fascinating seminar will take place Wednesday, the 5th of July, at the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission in Dublin from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. It's only next week and places are limited, so don't wait up to register. You can register on our website, type CCC European Integration, then click on Jean-Monnet Centre of Excellence, and you can also check us on social media. See you next week.